Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Today is the day.
Today is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. It is Thursday. That means it is 7-11. It's 7-11. Okay, for those of you that did not grow up on Slurpees, that means today is the day at 7-Eleven you can go and get a free Slurpee, because it is 7-Eleven. So, it's for some of us as good as May the 4th, when we wish you a May the 4th be with you. And today is 7-Eleven, so there you go. Get a free Slurpee today at 7-Eleven. Let's see. Apparently, that is only great news in our live listening area for people in Wisconsin and Connecticut, because the rest of us, apparently, in at least our live listening faith radio audience, don't have access to 7-Eleven based on the locations across the country. But many of you who are listening online at myfaithradio.com or listening via the Faith Radio app live in 7-Eleven saturated country, in which case you have free Slurpees today. Okay. I'm not even going to necessarily call this a sad note. One notable thing in the news this morning. If you remember the 1971 Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory movie, one of the characters in that movie's name is Violet. You likely remember her if you remember that film. That child actor was 13-year-old Denise Nickerson. Denise is now 62. A year ago, she suffered a debilitating stroke and has been cared for by her son and daughter-in-law in their home for the past year on life support. And the family has now announced, after a medical emergency yesterday, that they are removing her from life support. Here's just the direct quote. They took her off of all the equipment. This is the family's post on Facebook. None of it was helping. It was only making her more uncomfortable. And so we are telling her it's okay to let go. That's a good reminder of the fragility of life. It's a good reminder of what it means to be pro-life. Today's a good day to have a conversation with your loved ones about their desires related to things like life support, which is, you know, artificial support of life. And so if we are genuinely pro-life from conception to natural death, then let's be genuinely pro-life from conception. No matter how that takes place, this is a good opportunity for in vitro fertilization conversation. Don't bring an embryo into being that you do not intend to bring to fullness of life. And likewise, don't try to sustain life beyond that which God is ordaining or blessing. You know, when the number of our days has been accounted for by His time and in His timing, let's go be with Him forever. Indeed, to live is Christ and to die is gain, because it's, you know, for Christians, more Christ. And if you're concerned about somebody's eternal welfare, today's the day to have that conversation with them as well. We're going to move quickly here to our conversation this morning with Ben Johnson from the Acton Institute. He is the rights writer. You can find him on Twitter at the rights writer. He and I have a lot to talk about, including did you know that the Russian Orthodox Church has been officially blessing Russian nukes all along? Well, now they're having a conversation about maybe banning that practice. So I'm going to have that conversation up next with Ben Johnson.
This is my right, a right given by God.
Joining me now is Ben Johnson from the Acton Institute. You can follow him on Twitter at The Rights Writer. Ben, welcome back.
Good morning, Carmen.
So I try to scan the headline news and find something scintillating for you and I to discuss each week. And my lead-off conversation piece for today is this from the Religion News Service. Russian Orthodox Church considers a ban on blessing weapons of mass destruction. First of all, okay, why do we bless weapons? Let me ask that question. Why would you ever bless a nuclear weapon? Isn't a nuclear weapon always and only for one intended purpose? And isn't that intended purpose simply absolutely in every way contrary to the calling of the church, no matter what variety of church it is?
Well, there you have it. So which I think is why they're rethinking this over in Russia, as far as I know, this is not a universal practice of the Orthodox Church. I've never been called on to bless a nuclear weapon of any kind. In some jurisdictions of the Orthodox Church, it's against the law if you're a priest to own a weapon, even to use in self-defense. So there's a huge contrast.
Interesting.
Here.
See, yeah. Now that's a fascinating little tidbit of information I bet most listeners didn't know.
Yeah, so there's a massive, a divergence here, to say the least. In Russia, where the state and the church were so closely merged, it's almost impossible. For example, in the nation of Romania, it is literally impossible to say you are Romanian without saying I'm an Orthodox Christian. The two words are synonymous. Which is confusing, needless to say, if you happen to be part of the minority that is not. But the understanding was anything that defends the nation ipso facto defends the church and all Christian people. And if they were told these were defensive weapons because the West is going to use their weapons against us, these are merely a deterrent to make sure that we are not nuked. So that was the thinking that went into this. I think that is erroneous on multiple levels, but nonetheless, that was the thinking that went into it. I'm glad that it's being rethought. There are weapons that can be used for personal defense and so on and so forth. In some parts of the Orthodox world, they have a prayer where priests will bless personal weapons for self-defense use only. But obviously something like this is intended to wipe out major population centers full of innocent civilians. It's difficult to see how that is something to be blessed by the Prince of Peace.
So you and I could probably have a really long conversation about just a wide variety of subjects related to this. Personal defense, self-defense, those are good conversation pieces. Does the Pope, does the Vatican have some kind of like defensive army?
Indeed, it does. The Swiss Guard is in charge of defending its walled city-state, wherein the Pope lives and resides, because, of course, the Pope was threatened by invading, of course, most famously, the barbarians who sacked Rome, but other armies throughout time that have threatened to kidnap and deport the Pope to various places. So he lives in a walled city-state and has his own personal guard. At the same time, the current pontiff has denounced the use of any kind of weapons in self-defense as well. So there's some mixed messages coming out of the Vatican on that score. I would say that the Orthodox Church, with which I'm a little bit more familiar, has warrior saints, people like St. George, St. Demetrius, St. Alexander Nevsky of the Orthodox Church in Russia, who is a leader and so on. So the idea of defending yourself in battle isn't foreign. However, there's another strand as well. Of what are called the Passion Bearers, Saints Boris and Gleb, two princes in Russia, whose brother, they were all in line to become prince of Russia, this kingdom within Russia a long time ago, and their brother ended up storming the castle in order to kill them and claim the dynasty for himself. And even though they had the means to defend themselves, they chose not to, because they felt that would violate their oath as Christians. That's something that is not required in any way, shape, or form of anyone. But it's understood within the Orthodox Church there are certain people who are so committed to Jesus they would never harm anyone, including the people who are killing them, just like Saint Stephen.
Yeah, it's an incredible witness and testimony when a person chooses not to defend themselves in advance of the gospel, right? I mean, we call those people martyrs, and we recognize that. But oftentimes we imagine that those people are also without the means to defend themselves, that they are. That the force being applied to them is so overwhelming, they would not be in a position to defend themselves. I'm thinking here about the Christians kneeling in those orange jumpsuits on the beach in Libya, who were executed by members of ISIS. I mean, I think of them, and I think of Stephen, and I think, well, he did not have the means to defend himself in any way, and we consider them martyrs. This is just an interesting conversation, I think, for us to have going forward, Ben. So maybe you and I will till this soil further in the future. But since we did bring up the Roman Catholics here, when we come back from a quick break, can we talk about this this article about Catholics grappling with the transgender issue? Because I do think the confusion coming out of the Vatican on subject matter is interesting fodder for cultural conversation today. So can we talk about that when we come back?
Always happy to.
Perfect. All right. That's our topic next here on Mornings with Carmen. Continuing my conversation with Ben Johnson from the Acton Institute, you can find him at Acton's blog. You can also find him on Twitter at The Rights Writer. Ben, this article caught my attention this week. It's in the Wall Street Journal. It's entitled Catholics Grapple with Transgender Issues. Church institutions try to heed Pope's call to respect transgender people while rejecting the idea of gender as fluid. I would have maybe said that differently. Church institutions try to heed Pope's call to respect transgender people while maintaining or respecting God's created order as male and female intentionally on purpose for marriage. But that would have been too long of a headline. So tell us what's going on here and this struggle for people to follow what we all understand to be the truth revealed in God's word, as well as statements by the Pope, which are sometimes contradictory to that.
I think your headline would have been the right one. You know, as Christians, we have multiple callings, which we're called to love and embrace everyone, and yet also to maintain a firm line on what is true. We're called to have tolerance for people, but intolerance for false teaching. And so these two things often tear us in two different directions to begin with. When you add to that statements that are confusing on an issue that's inherently confusing in the first place, an issue that a lot of people don't know the science or the theology about, then the watchword is confusion. So, for example, as the article begins, St. Bridget's National School outside Dublin is going to allow boys to wear the Catholic schoolgirls' dress starting very shortly, and there are various Catholic schools that are going to allow people who identify with the opposite gender to express that in the way that they dress. At the same time, you've seen Pope Francis put out statements that are somewhat in tension with one another. He's met with a biological woman who identifies as a man, and when he did that, he used the pronoun he to refer to this person. At the same time, he's likened transgender ideology to a threat like nuclear weapons. So there have been statements coming out of the Vatican going back to 2000. I'm told that the statement in 2000 was quite clear that biology determines sex, period. Which would be in harmony with a broader understanding of the Catholic, what the Catholic Church calls the magisterium of its teachings on sexual issues. So it has a very biologically based understanding of this, rooted within the Christian philosophical and theological tradition. But on the other hand, we've seen this a sort of an effort to find out how to deal with that on an individual level. And so right now it appears that different dioceses are going to deal with it in different ways. For those who are not Catholics, and I'm not Catholic, but the Catholics have a bishop that rules over a certain geographical area, usually a large city in the outlying area or part of a state. And so in those areas, the bishop is going to determine whether someone who is transgender can't serve as a godparent, as happened in Spain a few years ago, or whether boys can wear dresses in underage schools, in Catholic schools, and perfectly be within harmony. How you reconcile those two things, I think, is a train collision waiting to happen if certain core principles aren't held to, which is the reality of biology, I think, has to be overriding. The complementarity that God built into the two sexes, that the two sexes are intended to complement one another. Each has two different gifts, and the mere need to accept people as they are struggling, to walk with them and deal with them pastorally as they are struggling, but to understand that 80 to 95% of children who have gender dysphoria, what used to be called sexual identity crisis, accept their biological sex before they become adults, according to multiple studies. So the vast majority will end up embracing the sex into which they are born, and so that ought to be our predisposition, is that in time, the vast majority of individuals we are dealing with will harmonize and live a life without requiring surgery, without requiring any use of hormones, the use of which has not been medically determined at this age for that long a period of time. And it will end up embracing a life that they can live to the full. That ought to be our disposition, to affirm the truth and to walk with those who are struggling to help them accept that.
So as you're listening to Ben and I's conversation, and you're saying to yourself, wow, I need to be equipped for that conversation. That conversation is coming to my church. I ought to be able to have it more effectively, and I need to be equipped. My next guest in the next half hour is Preston Sprinkle from the Center for Faith. The Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. And this is actually the subject matter of our conversation in the next half hour as well. So, Ben, let you and I shift gears, because I really am intrigued by the conversation that is now happening in California related to resumption of rights related to people who now have felony records. So a person has committed a felonious crime. They have paid their debt to society by going to prison for the appropriate period of time. They are now a felon. They now have a record. They're out. Should they, having served their time, not only be allowed to vote, but serve on juries? Like, what's the rights conversation we ought to be having here?
Yeah, well, the reason this came up, as you alluded to, a state senator in California has introduced a bill that would allow convicted felons to serve on juries. And it's passed the California State Senate 27-10. The idea that it's being used to justify this is that you are guaranteed to be judged by a jury of your peers. And if you've been convicted, then there should be convicts who are on the jury who reflect your own background. This is borderline ludicrous, just for one or two reasons. One of which being, you'd have Jesse James judging bank robbery. You'd have Charles Manson judging murder. But leaving that aside, anyone who's related to a police officer is ineligible to serve, because it's believed that they will automatically side with a police officer because someone in their family is a police officer. If you've been convicted, you've personally been convicted, I think it could be said you have an animus or a bias against the system. Particularly if you're innocent, and everyone in prison is innocent. So I think that's part of it. And then if they're going to restore this, I think they need to do it across the board. So what about people who are guilty of hate crimes? I can think of one specific California resident, Tom Metzger, who's the founder of White Aryan Resistance. He was convicted in a civil trial of instigating skinheads to murder a 28-year-old Ethiopian man in Portland. If you're going to restore all felons the right to serve on juries, then Tom Metzger could end up serving on a jury. Do you need a skinhead leader when skinheads are on trial? It seems to me that this is inherently wrong. There is bias that is inherent in the system. But then at the same time, there is just the question of whether people who are guilty of violent felonies and who may or may not be repentant in their personal life and outlook should be setting the course of law that other people in both making the law and in applying the law to people, as the rest of us have to live under that.
You fascinate me. I love the breadth of your not only your knowledge base, but the application of the mind of Christ to the matters of the day. Ben Johnson, thank you so much for joining us today. As always, you guys can follow him on Twitter at The Rights Writer. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. We'll be right back. Maybe the hottest topics of conversation in the culture today center around the topics of sexuality and gender. For those of us who are Christians, the continuing challenge is, how do we bring our faith to bear on those subjects? And how do we do so with clarity, with compassion? How do we bring the truth to bear in grace in our conversations and in our relationships? That starts internally with the application of the truth to our own lives. We certainly look at our own lives first, but as we engage a culture where now 48 of 50 states allow gender nonconforming identities on driver's licenses, and where kids, as in New York City, are allowed to identify as a gender other than their biology. And people at Nabisco tell us that our Oreos have a preferred pronoun as well. As we seek to engage in this particular culture, as we just discussed with Ben Johnson, Catholics are grappling with transgender issues because the information coming to them out of the Vatican is confusing. How do we do that? Well, Preston Sprinkle heads up the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. They are actually helping to equip Christians in this area. So he's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
Have you ever been on a treadmill and panicked when you couldn't find the stop button? Sometimes life is like that. We get stuck on a hedonistic treadmill. This is Callie Breeze with your Thrivent Money Journey Moment. Life can be a never-ending pursuit of things we think will make us happy. But you know what? The pleasure those things bring is fleeting. You're happy for a while, and then you look for more things to get. It never ends. Real joy and contentment come when you stop focusing on what you don't have and instead focus on what you do have. Like a God who loves you, people who care about you, a house that keeps you warm and dry, and food on the table. You really don't need more stuff to make you happy. You just need to change the focus. Enough really is enough. Hit the stop button and hop off that treadmill. You'll feel an overwhelming sense of contentment and joy. It'll add a spring to your step on your Wise with Money journey.
Welcome back. I'm privileged to be joined today by Preston Sprinkle. He works with the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. Let me just go ahead and tell you that you can find him online at centerforfaith.com. That's centerforfaith.com. It's the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. Preston, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
So one of the things that I really appreciate about the way you approach the conversation at the intersection of faith, sexuality, and gender, and you're helping Christians, Christian leaders, and churches engage appropriately in these conversations, prepare themselves for the conversations of the day. One of the things I really appreciate, and actually just get this from your book title, is that what we're talking about primarily and first and foremost is people. So can you just establish that this is a conversation about people, having real struggles, dealing with real things, as opposed to this is an issue or this is a set of issues or a constellation of letters that we string together, you know, as if it's just one monolithic issue.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I just want to, I guess, admit or confess that that's not my natural bent, if you will. Like I started as an academic, as a theology professor, and loved to read books and articles that nobody can understand, and even write some articles that nobody can understand or even cares about. So I naturally like to live in the intellect. But it was early on in my journey, I got to know several gay and lesbian people who had a very similar story of being raised in a church, grew up around Christians, and were just treated, nowhere near how Jesus treated people in his day, like just really dehumanized and ostracized and shunned and shamed. The spiritual abuse that some of these people have endured is just astounding, you know, and it really wrecked me. In fact, I remember hearing several gay and lesbian people saying, you know, I've never met a Christian who just simply wanted to get to know me as a person or hear my story or didn't absolutely just hate me, you know. I'm like, golly, like what, where have we gone wrong in this conversation? And I think oftentimes it is easy for Christians to attack an ideology or get fired up about some cultural thing going on. And I could resonate with that. There's a lot of things going on in culture that are very anti-Christian and are not good, you know. But man, when sometimes we do that and we attack a cultural thing and a lot of real people are hurt in the wake. And as Christians, I mean, goodness, this is so essential to our Christian identity, is that we love people. We are concerned about people. We love both our neighbors and our enemies. Like loving people and seeking people is central to who we are as Christians. So if we're not doing that well in this area, we need to, you know, really revisit what it means to be a Christian in this conversation.
And that's what you guys are doing at the Center for Faith. And so let me just remind people again, the reason that I'm going to tell them the website over and over during our conversation, Preston, is I want them to access what you guys are giving away and what you're offering to small groups, what you're offering to leaders in congregations and in Christian ministries. The Digital Leaders Forum, I think, is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. But I want you to tell our listeners about the Grace and Truth, or Grace/Truth learning experience, because I think that there's a lot of people listening right now who you know, they said, I might be the only person that I know that's interested in engaging in this kind of conversation, but I know I need to be equipped, or I know that I've got one other friend. We both know we need to be equipped. Maybe it's not something our congregation or our church is engaging in. So what you're doing is providing a way for people as individuals or small groups to engage in this material. So tell us about that.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. So me and another guy started the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender 3+ years ago as an organization to help equip the church, specifically leaders, not just pastors, but people who are really taking their faith seriously. They're engaging hard conversations. We wanted to stand in the gap between the LGBTQ plus conversation and the average person in the pew, because we saw that, you know, there's books out there, and some are helpful, some are very not helpful, you know, and some are hard to understand, and some are too fluffy, and some are not fluffy enough, you know. But we're like, man, we want to provide resources that speak, you know, everyday language that's very well researched, that answers relational questions and theological questions. And so that's why we exist as an organization, to do that, to stand in that gap and help resource the church through speaking, through videos, and also through written resources. The one resource you mentioned, Grace Truth, is a small group learning experience. It comes in two sections. The first 5 weeks is Grace Truth 1.0, and then there is another additional 5-week small group learning experience that you can go through. So it's a 10-week study as a whole. But if you just want to go through 5 weeks, that's, you know, you can do that. And we wanted to give the average Christian who, you know, is just trying to get their arms around this conversation, we wanted to get them equipped biblically, theologically, and also relationally and pastorally. So we really want to hit the grace side and the truth side. We want to reach people. We also want to understand what the Bible has to say about this conversation, and do so in a way that's not yelling and screaming. You know, sometimes we can't even have a conversation because everybody's just yelling and screaming and is so angry, and you're not allowed to ask a question, or you're scared to ask the wrong question or say the wrong word. We wanted to get rid of all that and create a safe, humble environment for people to engage this conversation well. So, you know, one more thing, and I'll stop, but, you know, we call it the Grace Truth Learning Experience, not just small group study, because I've been in small group studies, and they can be kind of cheesy and corny, and you have a few questions that, you know, you answer at the end. We wanted to hit people with thoughtful yet accessible written material with really good questions for them to wrestle with, but also there's a whole video component, because you and I both know, and I don't know how you're wired, but I know a lot of people that are like, look, I want to learn, I want to study, but I hate to read. So what we did is we created a whole video side of this learning experience with the person that doesn't want to, you know, read a whole chapter during the week, but would be very happy to watch a, you know, 5-10 minute video. So yeah, it's on our website, the Grace Truth Learning Experience, if you're interested in engaging this conversation both theologically and also relationally. I highly recommend it. I mean, I wrote it, so of course I recommend it, but we've had a really good, really, I mean, more than I could ever imagine, a positive response from people who are, you know, we've had people go through it that are 85 years old, you know, and really enjoyed it. And they've been in the same group going through this material as with like an 18-year-old gay person, you know, in a normal situation, those two people probably aren't going to see eye to eye on kind of anything, but we've had people go through this and really benefit from the conversation. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, Preston Sprinkle and I are going to return to this conversation. I know that my listeners in Wisconsin and across Iowa took offense to the cheesy, corny reference. Hey, we love cheese and we love corn. We just don't love Bible studies that are cheesy or corny. Okay, Preston and I will be right back. Returning to my conversation with Dr. Preston Sprinkle, we are talking about the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. We are talking about how Christians engage appropriately as Christians, authentically as Christians, in the conversations of the day with real people who are struggling with real questions related to sexuality, related to gender, related to marriage. So, Preston, I recently had a listener who communicated with me. I think it was via email. A listener's either text in Or they email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. And a lot of them ask really provocative questions. And this woman was dealing with the question, very real, real life question. Her nephew is getting married and he is marrying another man. And she loves her brother. She loves her nephew. She does not in any way want to sow dissension in their family. But she also does not want to communicate that she is aligned with this understanding of marriage, nor does she want to participate in an act of blessing it in a way that she thinks, she feels, she understands is not consistent with a gospel worldview. And so she and I interacted back and forth, and I think what we arrived at was this solution. So I'll let you tell me if you think this was a good idea. I suggested that she communicate directly with her nephew and his, I don't see, I'm having a hard time with language, and the language is nuanced, and you can help me with that in just a second, because I know that's something that you help leaders do. So I'll refer to him as his future spouse. And I said, you need to communicate with him directly. You need to communicate that you love them, and you need to communicate that, you know, that you're for them as people, but that you are choosing not to be at the wedding for this particular reason. And so find a way that you can serve them. Can you be the person that keeps all the kids at the house while everybody else goes to the wedding? Like, find a way to serve them during this time without having to participate in the blessing ceremony, and then go and have a wonderful time at the reception. How'd I do?
That's really good, actually. I just want to acknowledge that you're trying to find creative ways to extend grace and love while maintaining your convictions. And that, to me, that, I mean, you're further along than 90% of the Christians that I talk to, just trying to find ways to do this. Rather than falling back on just simplistic answers, whether it's, oh, I love this person, I'm going to attend, or, you know, I don't believe this is a marriage, I'm not going to attend. Like, again, and I want to honor, you know, people's convictions, but I think we do need to explore creative ways to extend both grace and truth to people in the situation. I'm gonna remember that response. That's so good. We do have an online paper that I wrote called "Can Christians Attend a Same-Sex Wedding?" And it's free. You can download it. And I think it's been really helpful navigating this conversation. Some people that want a black and white, give me the Bible verse, give me what I need to do type answer, haven't really benefited from the paper, because we don't give you a black and white answer, because it's not a black and white situation. There is no Bible verse that says thou shalt attend a gay wedding or thou shalt not attend a gay wedding. We are in what, you know, pastors and writers call a gray area. We're drawing on multiple biblical principles. And we need to navigate, you know, a complex situation here with both grace and truth. When Christians do have a real strong stance on whether they should or shouldn't attend, or specifically Christians who say they will not ever attend a gay wedding no matter what, I can respect that, okay? And I could see where they would arrive at that. My one pushback would be, make sure you're consistent with that. If you have a principle that I only attend weddings that match a scriptural definition or requirement of what a godly wedding should look like, then make sure you're consistent in that. In other words, if you don't go to a gay wedding, then make sure you don't turn right around and attend a wedding of somebody who's been, say, unbiblically divorced and is getting remarried, or a believer and an unbeliever getting married. Like, there's, I think sometimes we are inconsistent in how we are holding on to our convictions, and that can be really frustrating for people who are looking on and saying, wait a minute, well, you're doing that over there, then you don't agree with that, but you're not willing to, you know, extend grace to me in this area. So all that to say, it's a complex situation, and we need to ask both the question of, am I being consistent with my biblical convictions, and am I also extending relational grace to this person so that maybe I can have opportunities down the road to embody the love of Christ to them? And there is no black and white answer to that question.
Exactly. So I'm talking with Dr. Preston Sprinkle from the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. You can check it out at centerforfaith.com. Let me just go ahead and say that if you go to the website and you want to navigate to the things that Preston and I so far have been talking about, you're going to want to click on the resources tab, because that's where you're going to see the grace and truth curriculum. That's also where you're going to find access to that pastoral paper that he just described, should Christians attend a same-sex wedding ceremony. So, Preston, we've got a couple of minutes left. Let's just let's do this. Let's have a conversation about language, because I think that one of the challenges that we face in our conversations about these topics in the culture is that we acknowledge we're dealing with real people who are dealing with real concerns, and there's a lot of emotion on the line. There's a lot of feelings here. There's also truth, which we're not willing to compromise. Talk with us a little bit about language and maybe some things that you have learned along the way about our use of particular words we should avoid and or words that you have found helpful in this conversation.
Thank you for that. Language is so crucial to this conversation. Language used wrongly can build relational barriers that don't need to be there, and language used in a humanizing way can tear down barriers that can provide access to gospel-centered relationships. Just to give you a few examples, for instance, almost every single gay person I know does not like to be called a homosexual. And there's certain reasons for that that we don't need to get into, but that's just a well-known fact within this conversation that referring to gay people as homosexuals or a homosexual, even if most people that use that term are well-intentioned by it. They don't mean no ill will, but the term has been used throughout the last few decades by people who are really, really hate gay people. And so the term has kind of picked up that kind of like negative connotation, even if you use it with no ill will. But so in order to build a relational bridge with somebody who is gay, lesbian, I would say don't use the term homosexual. Like, are you a homosexual? Are you living the homosexual lifestyle? You know, there's no such thing as the heterosexual lifestyle. Just because you're heterosexual doesn't mean you're living the same lifestyle as every heterosexual on the planet. So let's avoid these kind of broad brush stereotypical, the homosexual lifestyle, or calling people homosexual, or even like sometimes the term practicing homosexual, Christians will say that. And even that just, are you a practicing heterosexual? Does that even make sense? How would you respond if somebody told, ask you that question? So yeah, homosexual.
So are we looking for, so are we looking for more language like same sex attracted? Or what? Give us the language, sure, that is good and appropriate to use.
Yeah, my favorite language is Tom, Kevin, Bob, Sarah.
Amen. Amen.
Get to know actual people and even ask them, like, to meet somebody where they're at. You can even ask them how do you identify, or try to pick up on how they're referring to themselves. And that just because you use a term that they prefer for themselves, that doesn't mean you agree with and endorse everything about their life. Not at all. Like, but it is a way to build a relational bridge with somebody, to use language that they prefer that you use. And then especially, I'll say this real quickly. When gay people see a straight Christian trying to get the language right, I've seen that create massive relational bridges where people are like, oh my gosh, I can see you are trying to love me in a way that I've not experienced from other Christians, just by simply trying to use language in a humanizing way. So ask them, what do you prefer that I call you? And that can go a long way.
Preston Sprinkle, thank you so much for helping us today. Thank you for helping us every day at the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. Let me encourage you guys to check it out. You can go to centerforfaith.com and check out and see if there's maybe an event in your area that's coming up that you could attend, or maybe one you could host at your own church. Preston, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Carmen. Appreciate it.
So thank you for those of you who have been texting in during my conversation with Preston Sprinkle. One person asked, hey, who are you talking to? I missed that. His name is Preston Sprinkle. If you Google him, he's not hard to find. Neither is the Center for Faith, Sexuality, and Gender. You can simply find them at centerforfaith.com, centerforfaith.com. Another listener texted about an experience with what I will describe as somebody who was basically aggressively seeking to evangelize them into a same-sex experience. Obviously, that is a conversation for which we need to be equipped as well. There is an evangelical zeal among those who advocate for the LGBTQ agenda. Don't be unprepared. Do not be unprepared for sexual aggression today. It comes in all forms. It comes in many varieties. As Christians, we need to be equipped for that. This particular conversation is really about the nuance in the culture today and how you and I need to become students of that, which frankly is very, very difficult for many people to even comprehend and understand. And if you and I can't at least get to the place where we can till the soil of conversation with a person who is LGBTQ aligned, then we are going to have a very difficult time ever getting to the point of evangelism. So what we're really talking about is conversational apologetics way prior to a conversation about evangelism itself. And so let me just encourage you to do the hard work. Do the hard work of tilling the soil of this area of conversation in the culture today, because it is, you know, frankly, dominating a lot of the headlines of the day. It's dominating the changes in laws across the country, which here's the language for that. SOGI, sexual orientation, gender identity, 48 states. Only Ohio and Tennessee now restrict citizens from changing their sexual identity or orientation on legal documents. So all the other 48 are on board. You and I need to be equipped for that. More next here on Mornings with Carmen.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.